And so I want to start with right here. First of all, Rafa, do you support the measure known as SOS that would make it hard to approve these projects without a vote of the people? And then what do you think about some of these projects being proposed in some of these areas, including the Otay area?
Sure. Well, thank you, Scott. I appreciate the question. I appreciate Voice of San Diego for putting on PolitiFest. I remember the first one in 2011. It was over at Liberty Station. It was pretty hodgepodge. Is that okay to say that? But it was
very successful in its own way.
It was very successful in its own way. And it was a lot of fun. So I appreciate that. And I want to thank all my the other candidates who are here today to talk about extremely important issues, especially housing, which is something that I am very focused on. I've been a real estate and land use attorney for almost 20 years. So I understand land use planning, the public planning process, its deliberateness, and how it really, frankly, should be done. I'm not a big supporter of ballot box planning at all. I remember in 2013, the Barrio Logan Community Plan update, if you remember that. It was passed through years of deliberation, working with the community, public outreach. 95% of that plan was approved by everyone. Everybody liked it. There was 5% that wasn't liked. The city council passed it. There was a referendum with some big interests, and it's dead. And in Barrio Logan, we have severely impacted environmental justice issues that affect a lot of poor people, some of the worst air quality from industrial operations and the 5 freeway and the Coronado Bridge dumping on that community, and we still don't have an updated community plan. And people all over the county got to vote on that community plan. And that's not good land use planning, folks. So SOS requires a countywide vote for all general plan amendments, which means everybody in the county is going to get to vote on a proposed project anywhere in the county. I just don't think that makes sense. Now, I also am not a supporter of urban sprawl and a lot of greenfield development. That doesn't make sense. We have greenhouse gas emissions reductions targets under state law that we have to meet. 19% reduction by 2035. We're nowhere close to getting to that. So building greenfield tract housing developments isn't going to get us there. And that's why I've proposed a housing plan that focuses on the creation of enhanced infrastructure financing districts, a broad-based housing supporting infrastructure bond to focus density where we need it, which is along transit corridors. That's what we need to do. Even if we built all of these proposed projects out in these rural areas in the wildland urban interface, it's never going to deliver the number of projects that we need, a number of housing units that we need. The Sandag Regional Housing Needs Assessment says that we need to build 19,000 units a year to keep up with demand, and that we're 160,000 units short right now. We've been building and starting less than 10,000 units a year for the last several years, and this year housing starts have plummeted by 43% over the same time last year. So you can talk about these projects that will build 1,000 units here, a few hundred units there, but the order of magnitude of the problem is so great that we're not even talking about the right scope of a solution. So I would like to see a real focus. I have a plan that puts a real focus on building the type of housing that we need, which is transit-oriented, dense housing to deliver the tens of thousand units of we need that we need. And these projects and this initiative, which frequently, most of the time, are funded by strong corporate interests, professional sports teams. There are exceptions for commercial development. There are exceptions for resorts. Folks, this proxy battle that is going on in this region is not going to solve the issue that's right in front of us. So I don't believe in ballot box planning.
Got it.
Yeah.
Ms. Rodriguez.
Thank you. I love that the lawyer went first, so you can put, you could say all the statistics. I love it. So that saves a little bit more time for me. So my name is Sophia Rodriguez. I'm running for county supervisor as well. I'm actually a county employee under the Health and Human Services Agency, and I do a lot of homeless evaluations for people to come in with the family resource centers. And the reason I'm running is because I'm actually a survivor of homelessness myself. I just escaped homelessness roughly. Thank you. I appreciate that. It's a struggle. I was homeless in the middle of my third year at UCSD. I took public transportation. I took two buses to take the Blue Line to go up to Old Town, to take the Express to go up to UCSD. And even though there's one Express line, it still took me 2 hours to get there. So I literally had to plan my classes around the bus schedule. So, and in the middle of a student, my family was asked to leave our living premises for remodeling. We were given 30 days to leave, and as many of you know, 30 days is not enough time to find a new place. So my mom was forced to, I'm a immigrant child, a daughter of an immigrant. She returned to Tijuana, and she told me to come with me. And I said no, because I need to finish my school. I was at risk of dropping out. So I lived in my car for a long time. I rented a living room for a while. I was couch surfing. At the time, I would actually sneak into some of my friends' houses when their parents weren't looking, crash there and sneak out the window the next day. So that was pretty much my last 3 years of UCSD. And the reason I'm running is that while there's a lot of planning for homelessness, there hasn't been a lot of history, especially in the county, that voices of homeless survivors or people who are currently experiencing homelessness, putting their perspective on the situation. And I actually read the 10-year action plan that the city of San Diego just released recently, and they provided five good strategies. But the one that stuck out to me the most is those funds need to be 100% put into building low income housing. Yes, one of the strategies is making county services more available, fast tracking it, streamlining it, expanding it. That's great, but at the end of the day, if you apply for a homeless voucher or a housing voucher or a deposit voucher, I've done all the vouchers. At the end of the day, even if you get it, there is no housing units for you to use it. So this is an emergency. This is a crisis. And we need to build more low-income housing. And then going back to the question, I as the county supervisors have traditionally been conservative and approved a lot of sprawl developments. Me speaking for the South Bay, look at Otay Ranch. That's all large multi-house housing that was expensive and led to the housing crisis from 2007. So we need to be smart. We need to be targeting low-income families, young professionals, and those who are going into retirement, because senior citizens are very at risk for losing their homes because they are on a fixed income.
Now, do you support that SOS?
No, I don't, because this is the first time that they're putting, Rafa actually said it very well, we're getting input from different local municipalities when we need to focus on targets and look at that community. So as someone who is active in the community, we need community members to put input. So I would say no.
Thank you. Having had a chance to look at SOS now, I see that it has some merits and there are some good things to support in it. But in its current form, we need a response to the amount of big money that's getting involved in these decisions that affect the voters. I was born and raised here in San Diego. I've seen the city change. I was raised in a neighborhood, Logan Heights, Barrio Logan, that has seen a considerable amount of blight. But I also know that bad planning leads to very expensive solutions in the future. Having had worked for the Redevelopment Agency and having been involved in creating thousands of affordable housing units, not only as a project manager, but as a council member, an assembly member, and a senator, I've had a lot of experience building affordable housing, building quality affordable housing to San Diego, and also, working on the land use plans that will create healthy neighborhoods in the future. What happened in Barrio Logan really broke my heart. I thought San Diego would stand by the people of Barrio Logan and help us plan the future of our community, yet they sided with a big moneyed interest that did not have a healthy position on what they wanted to accomplish through the plan. It was sad to see that big money won in that instance, and I'm very concerned that big money is gonna win in the future how we plan our communities. So, everything I've done in government involves the community. Let them decide what their community is going to be like. Let's incorporate growth. When we built the Mercado, we asked people, what do you want your community to look like? And they picked density. They picked density because they wanted amenities. They wanted services. They wanted a healthy community. And that's what we brought them. Every project, whether it was a land use plan approval or an affordable housing project or a housing project in my district, was passed with zero opposition. And that's part of the problem that we're facing with SOS. This is a breakdown in leadership at the government level, where you make decisions that really anger the community and they respond with ballot box measures. Those problems need to be solved at the government level, at the decision, through the decision making process involving all the stakeholders, so we successfully account for what we need in our city and in our communities, provide for what everyone needs through a bargaining process and through a process where people are involved in designing the future of their city. We have a beautiful city. People want to keep it beautiful. And it's the obligation of the elected leaders to work with everyone in the community to assure that we work toward a common vision and common goals to provide quality, affordable housing with the right amount of parks and jobs. You know, so, you know, we have an obligation to work to that. I've done that. I've successfully accomplished that working in my district with my constituents and creating quality, affordable housing for families. And you know, unfortunately, I haven't seen, since I left the city council, I haven't seen a lot of quality, affordable projects come to my community. It takes initiative. It takes hard work. You need to go out there and work hard to you know, amend our plans, get them done, and work with people in the community to ensure that we're not zoning through the ballot box, that we're zoning through the community-led process with leaders holding hands, walking hand in hand with the people in the community to ensure we achieve our goals. Come visit some of the projects that we've done. Every single one with no community opposition. And that's what we need in this county.
So just to be clear, you're negative on SOS, but you haven't made a decision yet?
I haven't made a decision.
Okay. Taylor.
Good afternoon. My name is Kenya Taylor. I'm running for County Board of Supervisors in District 2. SOS is a major topic in our area because, unfortunately, in the rural communities, we're impacted by fires at a higher rate than most areas. Being out there for over 30 years, it's important that we make sure that we don't have the sprawl development that some want, but at the same time, we need to make sure we listen to the people. SOS is something that I definitely believe in, that concept. However, I'm afraid that if we continue to do business as usual, District 2 will continue to be left out. It doesn't make sense that in 2003 we had fires and we are not in a better place than we were. Now, we had great firefighters helping us out yesterday and the day before. However, there's so much more work that needs to be done. We need to listen to the people. The people are saying they want help, they want jobs. We could build all the homes that we want, but if people can't afford it, it's a waste. It's important that we don't have any more students living in their cars. Again, I love the concept of SOS. However, I'm concerned about the implementation, because unfortunately, when you have people who have billions and millions of dollars at their hands, they mislead the voters. We don't need to suffer any longer. We need somebody that is a supervisor in District 2 that believes in the people, that believes in not only supporting our homeless community members, not only supporting our low-income community members, but we need to expand the middle class. We need to talk about more things such as creating apprenticeship programs in our schools so kids can become in professions such as builders themselves, so they could have more than a livable wage and they could be able to pay for their own housing, versus going to college like I did, getting 2 degrees, and then most of the students can't even afford to buy a home. There are 2 and 3 generations living in a home. Now, some love it, that's okay. But most people want their dignity, their respect, they want to be autonomous. our electeds have failed us continuously. It's important for us to have a voice. I want to make sure that we have a voice and the voiceless is not discriminated against anymore. Housing, unfortunately, is not our prisons, which invest so much in our community members. That is not okay. We need to not do business as we've done in the past. SOS, again, is a great concept. I want to see more people at the table elected that could support us in our areas. Now, in our rural communities, unincorporated areas, we don't have a mayor. We don't have city council members. I've been out there for over 30 years. Nobody is knocking on our doors asking us questions. We have a number of older adults that are there that do not have access or use computers all the time. We can't do business as usual. We need innovation. We need to expand the middle class. We need to protect our kids and family. We need to protect our seniors. We need to have all this discussion. And I am scared to say yes to anything if we do not have long-term solutions, because we keep spending money without long-term solutions. And that's why we're not getting the results that we need. Thank you.
Councilwoman Diaz.
Thank you. My name is Olga Diaz, and I am serving in my third term as an Escondido City Councilwoman. And I do support SOS, although I find that this topic specifically is taking the air out of a lot of other important county issues. So let me answer very clearly. I support it. The city of Escondido has something similar in place. It's called Prop S. It was passed 2 decades ago. And essentially what it does is it freezes the general plan, that was devised with community input, agreed to in terms of zoning and density and all of the different types of land uses that we have in our city. And then it was voter approved. And then after the voters approved it, it's frozen. So if there's going to be a significant change, that's when the public would then be asked again if they approve of that change. And the reason this came about in Escondido is because of a lack of trust between the public and the policymakers. So sometimes people get elected and then they feel like they know better than the public. That's unfortunately what happens a lot. So the zoning changes and sort of surprises and, you know, not including people in decision making, that is what causes the reaction to have a ballot box zoning, if that's what we want to call it. In Escondido, it's helped maintain the peace for the last few decades. So we updated our general plan in 2012. We, as a community, decided to pop density in our urban core using a specific planning process. We have thousands of units approved in terms of the density in a part of our city, and we're only slowly starting to see that developers are wanting to bring forth some projects in an area where we've already said, go ahead and build. So our community, I think, has been safeguarded from a lot of repeated ballot box fights, which, by the way, even without SOS, have been happening throughout the county. If you think of Lilac Hills as the most recent example, this was a project in Valley Center. It was denied. The developer put it on the ballot. Everybody in the entire county got to vote on it. And it's a story of David and Goliath over and over. You have a developer with a lot of money, and then you have a small community group who fights hard, and they were able to actually win. The community won. And so if you think SOS is like a new thing, it's not. It's a result of the symptom, which is the fact that land use battles are occurring now throughout the county. So I can defend SOS and I can support it because at my core, I'm just not afraid of it. It is on the ballot. I didn't put it on the ballot. It is on the ballot. There will be a result. It'll either pass or it won't. If it passes, I will uphold it. If it doesn't pass, my hope is that by being elected, I can bring the kind of genuine and honesty and communication with the public that they don't distrust me as an elected official. More importantly, they shouldn't distrust the County Board of Supervisors. And this is a symptom, I think, of why, you know, the distrust is a symptom of what is causing something like SOS to be placed on the ballot by residents. So yes, I support it. No, I'm not afraid of it. Whatever happens, it's going to be a vote of the people. And if you want to see examples of something like this working just fine, look no further than Escondido, where development has not stopped. In fact, any hindrance in development has been more caused by economic downturn or the loss of redevelopment. But if you come to Escondido and you haven't been there lately, it looks entirely vibrant, and we have hundreds of units online or coming online soon, and we have thousands of more units that are still approved. So we want the development in our community. So anyway, I can talk forever, but yes.
Can a person deduce from what you said that you're skeptical of the appropriateness of some of the projects that seek to amend the general plan in the county?
Yes, I think I like the idea that the general plan is adopted by the public, and that if we're going to make significant changes to the general plan, that the public should have some say in a process that includes their input. And so SOS forces that to be a criteria that will be in place, and I'm okay with that. I know a lot of people are afraid of what will happen and, you know, development will stop. I really don't believe that that's the case because, again, as a living example, Escondido has not suffered that fate. So I think general plan amendment, well, how about this? The general plan should be updated more frequently. It shouldn't be something that only happens every 20 years. And I think that becomes the mechanism by which the community is constantly providing input. Maybe every 5 to 7 years, we make a commitment that we're updating the general plan with some of the more modern thoughts, like, you know, building housing near transit. 10 years ago, we weren't talking about that really the way we are today. So these new philosophies and new approaches would be introduced with more frequent general plan updates. And then, of course, SOS would freeze the general plan for the next 5 or 7 years, and then we would start all over again. And that's the opportunity for everybody to redesign and recraft and reimagine the future of our county.
I'm Joel Anderson. I think SOS is a sign of failed local leadership. That's why we have to put it on the ballot box, because if people were doing their jobs, we wouldn't need that or require it. I don't support it because I believe it leads to mob rule. The notion that the coast can decide on 40% of my district is unincorporated to force projects upon us that they won't take in their own community is the wrong way to go. So I'm definitely against it.
Question for the candidates: how then would we attract investment from the rural areas and focusing in on urban areas where maybe it might not be as profitable for them to build?
You want to start on this side?
Mm-hmm.
You want to go first,
Joel? Say the question again. I was thinking somebody else would answer it before I had to.
How do we actually get investment from developers to go into urbanized areas and close to the transportation corridors, when for them it might be more profitable to develop land that has less value and that they get to develop on their own and then kind of pull in new communities in, rather than going through cities and the bureaucracy of permits and...
Right. So, you know, the state's done a lot of work. One of our colleagues, had SB 35. And SB 35 said that if you were within a half a mile of a trolley station, that you could build high density, low income. Because the notion was that you wouldn't have a car, you wouldn't have the resources, and you'd be within walking range of actually using mass transit. To me, that makes a lot of sense. Locating those types of projects in Ramona or Pine Valley or Alpine, where there's no mass transit, not that you could use on a normal basis that would lead to a job prospect. Taking 2 hours to get to work or 3 hours each way is not a reasonable amount of time. So I think there's a lot of things that we can do that make good common sense. Builders want to build. When they're not building, it's because the system's broke, and we need to figure out how to fix that system.
Thank you. I actually have several ideas to try and figure out how to incentivize housing. For one, I'm not going to worry about the high-end housing market. It will take care of itself. I'm not worried about rich people not having housing. They're fine. I do know that we have a significant investment in subsidized affordable housing, which is also expensive not just to build but to manage. There are nonprofits managing these housing units, and they charge a fee. So not all of it is the investment in simply building the units. What we're missing is entry-level, market-rate housing for young professionals and young families. I think back to my first home, it was 1,500 square feet, 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom. It was sort of an entry-level product, right? I bought it when I was in my 20s, and I could afford it. Even it didn't feel like it, but I could make it work. Now what you see is either the 3,000-plus square foot home, you know, or the subsidized affordable housing, and we're not building in that middle range where somebody who does have an income could possibly just figure out a way to buy a condo or a house. So a way to diffuse some of the expense is to have every public agency that owns property, and we all do, every city, every water district, every hospital district, public agencies own public land. Some of it is zoned for housing. To have all of our developable properties based on our general plans throughout the region identified and possibly lumped together into a JPA and the Joint Powers Authority, where we're putting all of our developable housing into a bank, basically, and asking developers through an RFP process to go ahead and build the kind of housing that we want, you know, entry-level housing, and diffuse their building costs in two ways. One, by contributing the land. I look at it as no different than when we do affordable housing subsidies. Right now, government gives money for development, right? So in this case, it wouldn't be money, it might be land, and so that the cost of land would be reduced or eliminated. The other thing we can do is talk about affordable housing. One of the things I hear from developers a lot is how much the fees are to develop, right? The water hookups, the inspections, the, you know, everything that they have to pay to be able to build in the cities and or anywhere. And I think, okay, if they're building affordable units, and there's a definition of the affordable unit, perhaps agencies can negotiate a reduction in fees. You know, maybe we do that to offset their costs for building the units. Because at the end of the day, an agency like Escondido, we don't build any houses. The mayor's not swinging a hammer building houses. We zone land, we figure out what kind of funding we have available to contribute to developers to build the housing. So we do have to work in partnership. So that's one idea. I also like the idea of large-scale developers. Think of a Qualcomm or Amazon or even some of our universities that have thousands of employees, that they build on-site housing for some percentage of their employees. I like the old model under Spreckles, you know, Spreckles Theater, Spreckles Oregon, the Spreckles company, it was a sugar factory model, and they would go into rural areas and build their factory, and they would also build a whole village around it for their workers to be right there. Now, I don't really think that that's like the only way to do it, but if Qualcomm built 500 units on property they already own, and those people live and work at Qualcomm, they're not driving on the weekends, you know, they're there. I think that's the kind of thing we need to incentivize businesses with, to say, look, if you can afford it and you can get some of your employees off the road, that's also a healthy way to do it. In Northern California, where I grew up, and we had this housing crisis, and the expense was overrunning a lot of young people and even families that were established. They set up the Silicon Valley Land Trust, where large corporations that wanted to retain good workers put money into a trust that helped people buy homes by sharing their cost of down payment. Now, building a lot of apartments is fine because it provides housing in the short run, but if you want to build wealth and get people out of poverty, home ownership and equity are really the tools that we also need to consider. We can't forget those things. So between government agencies contributing land, reducing fees, businesses building some portion of their workforce housing on site, and us figuring out a regional approach to help people with home ownership, I think those are the kinds of ideas that we can make happen. They exist in other areas. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. And I'd love the part about figuring out these complicated systems and why they're fragmented and how we can talk about solutions that are actually implementable. Is that a word? I just made one up. So that we can make some progress. But fighting about it is what's wasting a lot of time.
So I think I mentioned I have a background as a licensed marriage and family therapist, and the bulk of our budget is under health and human services, behavioral health situations. There's some housing issues that are there too. I mention that because when we look throughout our budget, when you really break it down, there's discussion about housing in different areas. Unfortunately, what I find when I'm at the table as a co-chair for our East Regional Leadership Team, even when I'm in the Central Regional Leadership Team's meeting as a co-chair over there, departments aren't talking to one another. And it's scary because everyone's talking about spending money, but we're not talking to different departments to make it happen. The same thing also happens when we're in the discussion about this new Live Well Center. And now I might get kicked off the committee after saying this. However, it's about the people. When I find that people are not talking, or a select few are invited to learn about projects and they get a head start, it's not fair. We need transparency. It scares me when I find that minority-owned businesses or women businesses are being left out. And so people want to make money. Some people want to make a whole lot of money. If the developers that are here don't want to build for low-income, middle-income families, We need to get somebody else. One thing I learned after the first big set of fires in Ramona, I started working up there in 2004. There was a saying that constantly was said in Ramona. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting to get a different result. We're not getting different results because we're doing business the same way. People who I've talked to that want to build, have small independent businesses, they want to do something. But unfortunately, they don't have the manpower, woman power to get things done. We need to bring people in who have like minds that want to help us solve homelessness. Help us solve homelessness for that student that's living in their car right now. We need to go into all those vacant buildings all throughout San Diego County and have a comprehensive list and figure out what we could remodel to make sure people are no longer sleeping in the streets or in their car. Now, I mentioned the issue of my background in mental health because a lot of people are on the streets and homeless because they're using drugs to stay up at night so no one robs them, rapes them, etc. These are real issues. Simple solutions such as finding those people, investing in those up-and-coming, emerging leaders to build is critical for the success because so many people want to make a lot of money. Other people want to get their foot in the door, get that training going. It's really a win-win for everybody because they're able to get the experience. Obviously, they'll have someone overseeing the project, but we could have more training grounds for those young adults who want to build. We need to invest in people of all levels so we have housing now. When you're homeless, when you're living in your car, when you're that abused woman going to a shelter and you want to get on your own, you don't have time to wait. We need investments now. So we need to look at the leaders that want to have housing, those leaders that want housing now. We have granny flats. There's been a number of people who've contacted me saying, well, Kenya, what do you think about these tiny cabins or these tiny homes? Can we put these in a parking lot somewhere? They try to talk to our elected officials. There's no response. People need to feel safe and secure now, not later. Yes, we want to make sure we have opportunities for those that have higher income. God bless you.
Follow-up question. How would we find the funding when it comes to the county,
yes,
the money that has available, to shift it or be applied to projects like that?
Right.
What would the structure be to get there?
I think it's time for us to look at our budget as a whole. Now, Health and Human Services has over $2 billion. Public safety, when we look at our prisons, there's so much money going into the jails. It's about another, there's a lot of money there. Those two areas are 65% of the budget. Land use, environmental issues, is only about 11% of our budget. So if we work together across the different disciplines, my background is in integrated approaches. We have money that's there because people keep coming to me or used to come to me when we had money to put people in hotels or they're constantly paying for recovery homes. They're paying for a lot of people for services already to be in temporary homes, but it's not a long-term solution. They're paying millions and millions and millions of dollars where our clients are getting services, but it's not sustainable services. And so people tell me, well, Kenya, if I get well, I'm going to be kicked out and on the streets. So instead of setting people up to fail, we need programs that have short-term solutions and long-term solutions, have all the people that are part of county contracts to talk and create opportunities now, such as those small homes. We have in Campo, I've worked out there. The barracks were turned into apartments. Why aren't we doing that in other areas? These are things that have been shown to work, but we're not doing as much as we can. Thank you.
Senator Wesso, how would we actually move forward to issues and programs that have not been handled or considered if the board doesn't get a Democratic majority, and then there's this, say, fight to bring in new ideas and put them forward and actually have them become something?
Well, I believe that all the best ideas are bipartisan, and you have to work to build consensus toward solutions, and you have to involve the public in arriving at those solutions, because that what gives strength to any negotiation process. But you know, if you talk about investing in our neighborhoods, no one in the world is gonna invest in revitalizing our neighborhoods without a return on investment. You got to find a way to allow people to make a living or get a return on their investment and by investing in our underserved areas. And I've worked hard to do that over the years, and there's a combination of things that you need to do. Any local government has the power of zoning. Zoning is very valuable. If you give somebody the ability to actually build something and make it a financeable a project that can get you a return on investment, that would lead to more investment in our community. So we have to find that balance of creating healthy communities that allow someone to get a return on their investment. Also, we talked about SOS. You know, the problem with SOS that I see is that it doesn't resolve the issue of you can get the zoning approved by the community, and once it's agreed to, it doesn't give you permitting certainty. So it doesn't stop the lawsuits from coming, even if you have to go through a lengthy voter approval process and you conform and you apply with the city to build a project and it conforms under the code, it doesn't stop the lawsuits. And that adds to the cost of the projects that we intend to build. There's a whole host of things depending on what you want to build. You know, I've worked in creating shopping centers and affordable housing and market rate housing. And there's a lot of things that you have to consider in that process, but you have to physically go out and solicit investment in your community. But a lot of the things, the tone that you set, the tenor of the policies that you put in place are those that will speak for themselves in attracting investment to the area. You have to encourage investment. You have to use every resource available. The county, the city, school districts, everyone owns land. They own land that's not being used toward a goal to fulfill, let's say, the mission of whatever the organization. I served on MTS. They own a lot of land that's just sitting there. At the state of California, we're putting our unused land to work to build affordable housing. And everywhere you have a resource, you have to put it in place, including working with the finance community to get them to make investments and working with programs that we have under the state and federal government that give them a tax exemption for investing in underserved areas. You have to know the law. You have to know the resources available to you, so when you see an opportunity, you know how to spearhead a solution, because you have the tools, you have knowledge of the tools that are available to you.
Thank you. Ms. Rodriguez?
I think that's something that gets ignored or doesn't get mentioned a lot in these conversations regarding housing or homelessness is defining what affordable housing is. There's a lot of different definitions personally on what affordable housing is, but the federal definition is only 30% of your income goes to your rent or your mortgage. We're in San Diego, that's not the reality. I've seen families where their entire full paycheck goes to rent or mortgage. Another thing that I also want to bring up is what defines homelessness to begin with. So I want to challenge the stereotype of what homelessness is to many of you. It's not just people who are living in the street. It's people who are living where they do not want to live. I see come a couple millennials out there. If you're living with your parents because you can't afford your own rent or even with a roommate, you're considered homeless. If you get in a 3-day pay or quit notice or you get a 30-day eviction notice, you're already classified as homeless because you do not have a stable nighttime residency. If you're living somewhere that is not meant for housing, if you're living in your car, if you're living in renting out a living room, if you're living out at a shelter or transitional, that is not stable housing and you're already homeless. And so I just want to bring that up, and I feel like that is not mentioned enough when talking about solutions for housing. So as personally for the South Bay, we see too many sprawl developments, especially in East Otay. A lot of the Otay Ranch areas are already assigned for businesses, and we see it growing. And what I struggle with a lot, because I'm a lifetime resident of Chula Vista, born, raised, graduated from Chula Vista High School, go Spartans. I remember when that land, what is now East Lake, Otay, was put up for the supervisors to decide on what type of housing was going to be at. And that's great that SOS is getting input from on the ballot box, but you know what? 10 years ago, that wasn't even mentioned. The county supervisors just literally voted on it, and they opted for sprawl development. So we need someone on that board that actually knows what the community needs. And we can talk about actually purchasing a home, but if they don't have a stable place to live, if you can't live in a place where you can save up to purchase a home, then we shouldn't even be addressing that. My focus, my target is building low-income housing. And young professionals are leaving the state. People are leaving the state when they reach retirement age. They'd rather go to Nevada. They'd rather go to Utah. They'd rather see Alabama. The state is failing if you are forced to live somewhere else. So, and I just want to point out again, the 10-year action plan, there's 5 different strategies. And guess what? The one I liked the most was, let's focus all 10 years on building permanent housing. The county needs to be more proactive. I want to speak out just specifically to Supervisor Greg Cox. He's done a lot of great work, but I feel like he doesn't really do a lot of community outreach. The best example is Supervisor Nathan Fletcher. He's only one guy, but he's doing a lot of work. And that's just one. Imagine if we get at least 3 progressive supervisors on that board. Imagine the work that we can do. We can push forward and actually help San Diego. And another issue that is very personal to me, which is transit. Currently on the board of SANDAG, 2 county supervisors can sit on that board and give options. Traditionally, 1 seat is reserved for the largest district. That's currently Jim Desmond's is one of the larger districts. The other one, Christian Gaspar, I guess, just really likes public transportation. She just opted to sit on that. But the South Bay has one of the highest ridership people who take public transportation. Why don't we have District 1 county supervisor on the board of SANDAG? 70% of Chula Vista residents have to leave the city for their job. So there needs to be someone who can properly advocate for these services, and how you attract these businesses to stay in central locations is the county can waive fees. The county can incentivize by lowering streamlining permits. The city of Chula Vista, I want to say Mayor Mary Salas has done a great job in revitalizing downtown Chula Vista, and we can use that model. There's mayors and city council members out there in the South Bay that want to help. It's a joint process, but we need to tackle this issue forward. So that's how I would do it.
Sure. So again, the scope of this problem is so big, and I agree with many of the things that have been said by my colleagues up here, but we're tens of thousands, 160,000 units short, and we're getting behind several thousand units every single year. The Housing Commission has indicated that we're building about 10% of the middle income housing that we need to build every year. 10%. Think about that. I am the only candidate for any supervisorial district that has set forth a comprehensive, specific housing plan that the new executive director of SANDAG, Hassani Karata, has applauded as the kind of comprehensive plan that we need to be talking about. Number one, the cost of housing is getting passed through to home buyers and renters, the cost of development of housing. What does that consist of? Land cost. That's a market function very difficult to address. I like the idea of using government land and sort of throwing it in the pot. 2, regulatory cost. As someone who represents housing builders over many years, we can reduce the cost of the regulatory permitting, approval, process significantly through using technology, proper staffing of development services departments, avoiding late hits. Number three, the way we pay for infrastructure is broken. The market isn't working. Right now, when a developer proposes a development, the developer has to pay not just for the infrastructure that serves that particular development, like utility connections, sidewalks, but the developer also has to pay for other public infrastructure that doesn't just serve that development, but the public at large. Public parks, public safety facilities, main utility lines. All of that cost goes into the project, and that gets passed through to the home buyers and the renters. We need to change that model. I'm okay with the public paying for some amount of public infrastructure if the entire public is using that infrastructure, not just the folks who live in that particular neighborhood, that particular development. Why should they pay the cost for other public infrastructure if they're just buying a home in that very specific development? So what have I proposed? I've proposed $1 billion housing infrastructure supporting bond that will help pay for some of that infrastructure that will help housing development. Number two, the creation of countywide enhanced infrastructure financing districts where we can do requests for proposals, as Olga has indicated, along these infrastructure corridors where we will start to build infrastructure with the housing bond. It's a kickstarter. Once that development starts to occur, we will increase assessed values. We will create tax increment that under state law through EIFDs can be pledged to issue bonds to build more housing supporting infrastructure. We have now created a virtuous cycle to build infrastructure that supports more and more housing. We should lay that those districts over opportunity zones that were created as part of the 2017 Tax Reform Act. If you're a Democrat like me, that's probably the only good thing that came out of that Tax Reform Act, so that we can attract private capital through deferment of capital gains and elimination of certain capital gains. And then we should streamline aggressively the regulatory costs of building housing. If we do that, and we can do that through using our municipal financing tools, state financing tools, we can lay the groundwork, we can lay the foundation to deliver the tens of thousands of units that we have to deliver. There's a city initiative that's been proposed for $900 million. 900 instead of a billion, because it's easier to pass a $900 million bond than it is a $1 billion bond. It will provide for the development of a few thousand units for special populations. A few thousand units for special populations when we need tens of thousands of middle-income housing units. Folks, we need big ideas, we need big solutions if we're really gonna tackle this problem and not just continue to nibble around its edges.
Sorry, we've got only a few minutes, which is crazy. We obviously set a big panel up. So I'm gonna go one by one and sort of drill on a couple of points. Olga. I want to ask you a couple questions. The new mayor of Escondido, Paul McNamara, you supported him. He joined with Republican critics of Sandag's executive, Hassan Acrata. He was concerned about wanting more funds for highways in North County in place of transit. It wasn't as big a deal as it was made out to be, but it does seem like an interesting alliance. Where are you on the whole transit versus highways and Sandag's direction right now?
Sure. I support Sandag's staff proposal. I would not have done what Mayor McNamara did, but the beauty of having colleagues in the council that can think for themselves is that they can also be responsible for their own actions. So, you judge me on my words, my actions, my votes, and he's on his own on this one. I would not have supported his position.
All right. Joel Anderson, where are you on the Sandag direction right now and the transit versus highways?
So one of the biggest concerns I have is when was the last time a senior took a bicycle to go to Costco to get 48 rolls of toilet paper? When was the last time somebody took the trolley to their medical appointment? You know, it's great if you live in the inner city and you have consistent public transportation, but if you live in the rural areas and you're housebound, this is not helpful to you at all. And we made a promise, I didn't, Sandag did, that in 2004, if we paid for those bonds, that we would get road improvements. That compromise has continued to fail us. It's not funding the roads. It's not giving us the money back. We're still paying for the Grand Trolley Station that nobody in East County is going to benefit from. Now, I will tell you, there is one thing in there that I think is absolutely fantastic, as we finish the trolley to UTC, North County or La Jolla is going to learn what homeless really is meant. Because everybody who's homeless in El Cajon can get on the trolley now, head up there, and panhandle for more money. You know what? These aren't answers to these problems. These are legitimate problems we've had for years. And I agree with you, Kenya, that we in East County, we deserve better from our leadership, and we need to be working hard towards those goals that deliver for those people who are slipping through the cracks in the current system. And all the stuff that they're proposing helps no one. If you're, every fire that we've had come through East County, we've had to evacuate. I live in Harbison Canyon. There's no fire that goes through San Diego County that doesn't like to come through my neighborhood. Within the first month of moving there 31 years ago, we had to evacuate. These are real issues. And the idea of not expanding our roads and giving a safe passage. If you live in Ramona, there's only two ways in and two ways out. A lot of these places deserve better from their government. They've paid the taxes. We need to build those roads.
You could repeat the question, please.
The question is the direction of Sandag and the discussion about the priorities of transit versus highways. Interested in your perspective.
Okay. I'm impressed that you agreed with me on something.
Well, I get 453 bills with Democrats. All right.
You know, it's important for us to make sure that if we expand any road, we're aware of what happened in Houston. It was a good idea, and then they realized, oh, 26 lanes, it's a nightmare. More people were on the road. Now, we do need evacuation opportunities. The 52 is horrific. As I mentioned, I worked in the rural communities, leaving Ramona, coming down the 67, driving the 8 freeway out to Campo, Boulevard, different places. Also, when you leave Ramona and there's an accident one way, you could go through Poway, you could go down Wildcat Canyon, but if there's a fire and you're trying to get out and everyone else is trying to get out like they were doing yesterday, it's a nightmare.